TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's Raised by Wolves.
Welcome in, Raised by Wolves. Danny Cunningham, Dane Moore with you today as we are under 2 weeks until training camp begins for the Minnesota Timberwolves, and fake basketball is quickly approaching, and then real basketball will be soon to follow that. So it's an exciting time, Dane.
Yeah, well, I think that I'm not usually into fake basketball, but with this, the team that you know so little about, we've been told a million different things.
Sure.
But I think this will be a year that I learn the most from the fake basketball in a long time, whether it's just, I mean, who they start in the first game, or what the rotation is.
I'm curious also, you know, how many preseason games is Carl going to play in? Like, it's not as if he necessarily needs the
football,
reps.
Though. Like, they're not going to go, like, Rams and be like, we're just going to have you not play. Like, I feel like they'll all play in the games. What do you think?
I don't know about all of them. I think they have, what, 5 preseason games, if I'm not mistaken. Only one of which at home, 2 of which are on TV. I think probably 3 is sufficient. It's not like it's not like a guy like Carl needs those minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess I hadn't even thought of it. I just kind of assumed that they would try. Like, to, you know, it'll be a time
there will probably be 2 games where we see a normal rotation for like a half.
Yeah.
I think that might be the most realistic. Maybe 2 games where you see a legitimate half of basketball.
But it will be informative, I think, if it does look like an actual rotation, and we can see, is Gorgui Dieng in that? Is he, which I'm kind of assuming he isn't going to be, or is it, you know, what is Jordan Bell's role? What are some of those guys? We have this idea of the 4 kind of core players who are going to play a bunch, and Teague, Wiggins, Covington, and Cat. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, you can kind of paint a picture from anywhere between like 12 and 30 minutes for any of the other guys.
So I want to talk about the guys on the roster other than the 4 you just named.
Sure.
Because we know so much about those 4. We know that those 4 are going to be starters. They're all probably going to log maybe not quite 30 minutes a night, but very, very close to it. And the rest of it is a question mark. We don't know who the 5th starter is going to be. And I know we've talked about that. You have already gone over that in word form. We've talked about it on the podcast. That is something that's we'll find out at some point. It'll probably change from time to time.
Sure.
But I'm curious what the rest of the rotation is going to be. I'm curious what we're going to learn about a guy like Jordan Bell's really interesting to me because I don't know who he is as a basketball player. I think that the situation he was in for the first 2 years of his career is drastically different than this one. His role is going to be drastically different. I don't know. I have a lot of questions.
But it's normally when you're looking at teams, or if you just like pull up a random team in the league, you can kind of just look at what the salaries are of the players.
Yeah.
And I know it's not like a direct correlation, but a lot of the times the guys who are paid a lot of money end up, you know, playing a lot. And
sure,
there's obviously your Mozgovs here and there, and that happens.
What a contract.
But you can, that's a loose outline you can put together. For this team, once you get past kind of those known starter guys, it isn't. The money those guys are paid is, I mean, you got Gorgui who's making a lot, but then the rest of the guys are making between $1.5 and $3.5 million.
Yeah.
Can't really, I mean, so Jake Layman's making an extra mil than Noah Vonleh. That means he's going to play a lot more? Like, nah, I don't know.
I don't think that yeah, it's not enough money to dictate that.
But I guess for me, if I'm being honest, is particularly if we want to start with Jordan Bell, like when that news kind of went down and I, you know, they said it's a minimum contract, whatever, I just kind of gave me like a shrug. I was like, all right, there's like a third center or something.
Sure.
For the team. And just in, you know, some of the conversations I've had or just the way they've publicly spoken about these guys, it seems like Jordan Bell's part of the plan.
Yeah.
Like a real part of the plan, whether that be as a backup center to Cat, playing alongside Cat, kind of moving Cat to the 4 or whatever that might be. I think he's going to be in the rotation.
I do too.
So he's like kind of, you got up right there. You know, you throw that out and then, you know, Shabazz Napier, he's making just above the minimum, but he's the backup point guard.
They don't have anyone else. Yeah. Like he is in the rotation. I don't want to say by default because I think that
he's a rotation type player
in the NBA, but mm-hmm. he's also in the rotation by default.
Yes. Yeah. So it's kind of, we have to, just kind of fun. You got to like guess based on skill sets and anticipate what it is that we think they want them to be, what they want this team to play like. So I guess my question for you is, how do you kind of see that or I guess who is like the one guy from that group of cheapest one-year kind of contracts that you see playing maybe the most out of that?
Well, I mean, the most probably Napier, just because...
Yeah, I should have caveat other that, than
like,
Napier.
It's different because that's just positional necessity, I guess. I do think Jordan Bell is going to play a lot. But also, I could be way off there because I don't know what... Jordan Bell is a giant question mark to me because he played for the Warriors the last 2 years. He wasn't asked to do anything other than set screens.
He's never made a three-pointer.
He's switchable. He's attempted, I think, 7 three-pointers ever, five, missed all of them. I wrote about him earlier this week. Like, his number shooting improved last year from outside of 10 feet, and, like, you can tell he's trying to improve that part of his game, but it's not there yet. He's switchable defensively, which is nice. I mean, there are lineups, if he is your backup center and playing when Cat's on the bench, there are some lineups where you have four guys that can switch, and he's one of them.
My concern with him is, I think in the times when he was helpful for Golden State, it was like, you have one job.
Yeah.
You know, and it was very like hyper-focused, like, do this. I mean, that's something Golden State's been good with all of their role players.
Well, that's why that whole strength and numbers thing took over. That's part of the reason why they won the 2015 title.
Yeah, it was just like, do this. And now there's like, I'm afraid that Jordan Bell is going to be like, well, I got this whole canvas in front of me.
Yeah.
Time to whip out this and this and this. And when you go from such a hyper-focused role, it's just naturally an adjustment to go, I mean, like, showing off a multitude of skills. And I'll go back to the contract thing. A lot of the time, when you are a minimum-type player, they're asking you, be good at one thing.
Yeah.
And I think... If he does end up being a guy who can do 3-4 things that are helpful for your team, who plugs into a lot of different lineups, like, great, you've got an awesome value on that deal. But the assumption should be, because that's what his market value is, that he's not going to be a guy who gives you a lot of different things. Now, I'm interested to see what that thing is. Maybe if there's two, but he's just a player who, like, you can love that they got him for the deal, but also be kind of nervous about how big his role is going to be.
Yeah.
That's kind of my overarching, like, sentiment on him. That said, he's so different than any other big Cat's ever played with.
Yeah.
Like, well, I guess not in the sense he can't shoot. He's had plenty of guys next to him in that way. But from a physical makeup standpoint and from what I think he may be able to do defensively.
He's got to be the most switchable big defensively that Cat's ever played with, right?
Yeah, for sure. I don't believe all the switchy talk. I don't think this team it's out there a lot and people are writing about it and kind
Are you talking about Jordan Bell specifically?
No, I'm talking about the team.
Okay.
I'm talking about the team. Like, I mean, you play basketball, or just like when if you're playing like in a pickup basketball game, just really generally speaking, you're like, all right, this team's got a 6'9" guy we're playing against, we're going to switch four and we're going to leave our biggest guy on this guy.
Sure.
Or we're going to switch three. We're going to do that sort of thing. Whereas the Warriors or the Rockets have been a switch five team.
Yes.
You know, I mean, again, very painting with broad strokes here. I think the Wolves are going to be at most a switch four team.
I think so too. I can't see them being a switch five team because of who they, more so the point guard position. Like, I think that that's an area where they will have trouble switching in. The switch four team's possible. I think more realistically, for the most part, it's going to be a switch three team.
I do too, but that is contrary to kind of the narrative that seems to be developing. We're like,
it's not a narrative I agree with. I don't think that they're going to be a switch four. There are lineups where they can be a switch four team.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think primarily they'll be a switch three team.
On Tuesday, when we were when we got to talk to Gerson, I asked him what, you know, how would you, you know, define this defense?
Yeah, and I remember that question.
Now I'm remembering in my head because he was defining the offense. I said, which was, you know, playing fast and, you know,
yeah,
in that sort of way. I was like, how would you define, you know, how would you define the defense? And he didn't say switching.
No,
he said versatility and strategic.
Yeah.
Versatility doesn't necessarily mean switching.
It's what everyone reads it to mean.
Yeah,
but it doesn't necessarily mean it.
Different role, being able to play different defensive roles is different than being able to just generally in the defensive scheme, being able to be like, hey, we're switch partners.
Yeah.
Those are different things. And I think that's starting to overlap. And basically, my biggest like tenet of why I don't think the defense is actually going to look all that different is that I don't think Cat's going to be used that differently. And I think I think he's going to be asked to be kind of the tent pole of the defense. I don't think you're going to get him out there and it's going to be a who they play. They play Kyrie the first game. Like,
yeah,
if
yeah,
if
Carl covering Kyrie probably won't go really well.
Well, yeah, but I mean, some teams would at least like come up with a hard hedge or show in that situation. Yeah. And I think what you're going to see happen is, you know, it'll be just like when they played Kyrie last year in Boston and Jeff Teague's guarding Kyrie. And if Al Horford came and set the screen, you're going to see Cat drop back and either allow Jeff Teague to come back to it in like a hedging sort of situation, or you're just going to, or he's just going to drop back in the lane and welcome him to come, you know, meet me at the rim. And that's not what I think people are imagining. I mean, I don't want to speak for other people, but I don't think he's just going to get out there and start be asked to like move his feet.
No, that's not who he is. I don't think they want to. I don't think, first and foremost, I think the Wolves want to put their guys in positions to be successful. I don't think that putting Carl in a position where he's going to fail is good for the team or Carl. And I think that asking him to be a switch partner, asking him to go out on guys like Kyrie and a hard hedge like that is not where he's going to be successful.
I mean, I don't know. I would like to see him be able to, like, if you like to define like his defensive range on the floor, like vertically, you know, whereas that it was a very small distance before. It was kind of like the lane, you know, like you would maybe touch out to the 3-point line and back. I'm not against seeing Cat extend that range out to being able to be like 3-4 feet above the 3-point line and really get out on the hedge and retreat back. I think we've seen instances of that. I think he's more comfortable in that.
Okay.
I don't think that's what we're going to see.
Okay.
Because I think it's easier to run like a 5-man defense when you keep your like tent pole on the interior.
Sure.
There's this. The more you extend Cat's like verticality in that way on the floor, I think you open yourself up for more space. Then you're asking the other guys to cover like the wings there to, you know, to be, you know, tagging in or stunting in that sort of way. And now you're moving. Now you're moving. And that's for a good offense, an offense with good vision, you can pick that apart a little bit.
Yeah.
So I think that's why, at least initially, it'll be like 80, 90% Cat dropping back. What I would like to see is over time, you know, peel that back to 60, 50, the right opponent, 40, 30, like get him out there. If it's Covington out there with him, like raise hell. Like let's see, you know, let's see what we can do.
Two long arm defenders there.
Yeah. Back to the whole preseason thing, however much Cat does play, 3 games, 5 games, 15 minutes a night, 30 minutes a night, that will be something I'm watching for. And to the Jordan Bell point, is it going to be similar or different to the way Jordan defends that? Like,
yeah.
That'll be
I'm curious how their defensive philosophies will change based on personnel in game. Because you don't have another Carl on the team. Now, you have guys that are somewhat similar in terms of what they can or can't do defensively, but there's no one that's exactly the same. And I'm curious how the defensive side of this operation is going to change based on who's in the lineup.
If I'm right, and this is how they are going to use Cat, with, you know, straying away from the hedge and relying more on the drop, keeping him in towards the center, I think the center of the floor, I think the next best big man at doing that on this team is Gorgui.
I do too.
You know, but then again, I don't necessarily see him in the rotation.
Neither do I.
But maybe that, maybe that means he is. If that is the way they're going to defend, and that's the way they've, all of Cat's career, that's the way they've used him. And that's the way Vanderpool has coached in Portland. Like, if that's the way you're going to use the center, like, Gorgie's going to be better at that than Jordan Bell is.
Mm-hmm.
He's way bigger, has way better vision. And I guess I can't totally speak to Bell's communication, but I think...
Sure, that's an unknown for us, though.
But Gorgie's good at that. Like, there are elements of that specific style of center defense that Gorgui is the second best on this team. And I would say... definitely better than Vonleh. Vonleh is gonna get you paid defensively by being big.
Yeah.
You know, being able to handle some of those girthier guys in the post. And I think he's gonna be a good rebounder.
Yeah.
But I don't think Vonleh, you're gonna be like, oh, here's an awesome switching big, or here's a super versatile sort of way. I think they're gonna need to be strategic, to use Gerson's word with him.
How much time do you think that Vonleh and Carl spend on the floor together? Because in those situations that you just brought up where you're having to defend a Joel Embiid type guy, and there aren't necessarily many of them, but they exist. And Carl is
I think there's more than we think, man. Like, if you go down, you pull up a list of the league and go, who's this team center? Half of them you go, oof. Carl gonna be able to guard him? Like in a post-up situation? Seriously. I mean, even crappy teams like the Grizzlies, like Valanciunas.
Okay.
You're cool. I mean, you're cool with that. DeAndre Ayton, that's another bad team.
It's a bad team, yeah.
Like, but Ayton was Ayton actually averaged more points per possession in post-up situations than Cat last year.
And Cat
was fifth. Yeah. Ayton was third. I mean, it's like 1.02 to 1.03.
Sure.
But whatever. I mean, we've run a little bit too far with this notion that it's this super small NBA. I think the way to think about it is, yeah, there might not be two bigs anymore like that are going to pound you in the post in that sort of way. But a lot of teams have one who you got to be, who are going to cause you problems in like the combination of post-up situations, offensive rebounds, screen setting. I mean, like that stuff, if the Wolves are to go as small as maybe they've said or were perceiving, you're gonna run into problems in that sort of way, which, to answer your question, leads me to believe that Noah Vonleh is going to play a lot.
Yeah, a lot alongside Carl.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, because, I mean, I'm going to give Kat like 33 minutes a night.
Yeah.
There.
33, 35.
Yeah. I was looking at it. He played 33 under Tibbs and 32 under Ryan. I think that was impacted by foul trouble. I think they would have liked it to be 35, 36 on average. But I'm not, I think foul trouble will be back again. So there's 16 minutes of backup center time, like Cat off the floor. You got to play a different five.
Yeah.
And I think Vonleh should be in line for a lot of that. And then also, I mean, we've talked about the center. I've written about it at length. I mean, I think you're going to see Vonleh start a lot.
Yeah.
Because
start Carl at the four.
Because, yeah, I mean, even to take those Phoenix and Memphis examples, it's not only Ayton, it's Dario Saric, too. That's not a small guy.
No.
In Memphis, it's not only Valanciunas, it's Jaren Jackson. You know, those are guys who are going to punish you on the glass.
Yeah.
Like, I think, generally speaking, I think we've gone a little bit too far with the Covington at the four thing.
I think so, too. I think that we'll see him at the three more than we anticipate. And then that clogs things for other guys, though, too. When you do look at, when you go up and down this roster, playing Robert back down at three, where he probably belongs,
right,
legitimately, but so much of the talk has been, oh, he could be the starter at the four, and he still could be on some nights. On some nights, he will.
Yeah,
I'm sure more than once this season he will start at the four.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, as you're alluding to is like the ripple effect of that. You move Covington down. Okay, so now we're playing Andrew at the two. Want to play Jared and probably Josh,
Jake Layman.
Yeah, like how does that all? At some point, there's only so many minutes. And I know somebody was probably listening to this and thinking, like, okay, well, we don't need to give Wiggins, like, 32 minutes a night. I mean, I'm not saying you're wrong, but, like, I think that's going to happen.
He's going to, at the minimum, he's going to get 27.
Yeah,
at least, the minimum. I mean, if not the 32 to 35.
It's like, I mean, honestly, like, a guy who plays, like, 25 to 27 minutes a game, that feels... After the game, and you look at it, and it's a guy, oh, you played 26 minutes tonight? It felt like that guy was out a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a long time. Like, that would be, you would be able to really feel that if that's what Andrew moves to. And I don't see that happening.
No, neither do I.
I mean, maybe that optimizes it more, because then you can play Jared and Josh.
At least not at the start of the season, I don't think it's like that.
Yeah, I mean, and what have, I'm not saying Andrew's done a lot to earn it himself, but what have Jared and Josh done to earn to say, hey, we're for sure impactful two-way players.
Nothing.
Like, that's the thing. If Jared has a really good rookie year, or, you know, first 20 games of the year, he's like, you know, I'm making an impact on the offensive end, I'm stretching the floor, I'm getting to the rim, and I'm holding my own defensively.
Yeah.
Then you got to make the adjustment. I'm not, like...
And then on the flip side, Josh has shown he's an impact player on one end, but not the offensive end right now.
Yeah. So, you know, unless we're seeing, it's like, again, I'll use first 20 games of the season. It's like Josh has taken, you know, 50 catch and shoot threes. He's made 39% of them.
That changes the equation.
Exactly. So
But that's not what you can expect right now.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm saying that because I think it makes it like less of a clog than you think on the wing. It feels like it because you're like, oh man, okay, Wiggins, Covington, Culver, Okogie. I mean, I think Napier plays them too.
Yeah.
They got other guys that, you know, Travion Graham, that sort of way. It'll look like more of a clog on paper than it'll feel on the court.
Well, how much two do you think Napier plays? Because he's essentially the only backup point guard.
I don't
know how much two he'll play just out of necessity of having to play the one a lot, where it's not a situation necessarily like it was last year, where, yeah, you had Jeff and you had Derek, but you also had Tyus. You had a very serviceable third point guard, where now it is you've got Jeff and you've got Shabazz, and then it is I have no idea what's going to happen.
It's Jarrett. Jarrett will be the foul trouble injury de facto guy.
But if it's foul trouble injury de facto guy, that leads me to believe that there aren't going to be many minutes for Shabazz at the two because he's going to have to use
most of
his minutes as available at the one.
I guess I'm kind of on an island here, whether I think it's going to happen. I think it should happen.
I don't disagree. Like, I think it's a good idea.
I don't know if
the puzzle pieces fit.
Right. I think it should happen because I think Shabazz's game gives you a lot of what you would like to have at the two in a guy who will willingly shoot threes and can attack in the pick and roll offensively. And I'm quite frankly, a lot of my opinion here comes from the notion that he's done it. He played a ton along D'Angelo Russell last year. It was far and away D'Angelo Russell's best two-man pairing with another guard on the team, wing. And then he did it in Portland also with Damian Lillard. And I mean, they had it was something like 600 minutes, like a plus 12 net rating. Awesome. Napier and Lillard together. So his track record to me says he can play two. The roster to me tells me he can't.
Yeah, it's not a Shabazz Napier can't do it thing. I think they would be better off if Shabazz could do it more often.
Right.
But because of just the giant question mark behind him, it complicates things.
I think it'll happen because I think there's going to be a lot of guess and check going on.
Yeah.
There should be, right? Like
with a young team, yeah. I was thinking about this the other day. And I haven't done the math to see what the difference in average age is here. But as far as leadership and everything else goes, like this team is so drastically different from last year because Gorgie Jang's now the oldest guy on the roster.
Really? And I didn't even think about it like that.
Either Gorgie or Jeff. I forget which one, but I think it's Jeff. I think Jeff is the only guy on the
Jeff's
roster.
Jeff's 30 and he's 29.
And Gorgie turns 30 in February,
okay,
I think.
Right.
So like they've got one guy that's 30 years old entering the season. Last year, they had Taj. They had Lou Aldang. They had Derrick Rose. They had a lot of guys that were older last year.
Right.
And the locker room's going
Napier's
to be different.
Napier's 28. Like, Napier's a vet.
But
like,
he's not Lou Aldang. He's not Taj Gibson. He's not Derrick Rose. He's not old. I'm not trying to insult those guys, but
he might. That could be a stabilizing presence on the floor.
It could be, yeah.
More than Josh would be.
Sure.
Or certainly more than, like, Jalen Noel would be, or, you know, one of those.
Yeah.
Those sort of guys. So, yeah, I mean, that's another one I would like to see because I think it gives you a different dynamic than for sure Josh does, Napier, particularly on the offensive end. Can you afford it? Can you afford it on the defensive end? I don't know. They could. Portland could. Brooklyn could. Like last year, they made it work. Napier's tiny.
Yeah.
But
he's really small.
He's really small. And Jeff's not,
also not big.
Yeah.
He's not tiny, but he's not big.
Right. Well, he just. Whatever size he has, I don't think he maximizes.
Yeah. Jeff's like 6'2". Jeff's like our height, and Shabazz is significantly shorter than us.
Yes, yes. I did see that he has 6'8 wingspan.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's crazy. But like his height's not, not
he's,
anything impressive.
He's never used his height in a dynamic way.
I mean,
particularly
he doesn't like to dunk.
then he just goes on and does it.
He's done dunking.
Yeah, no, the wing... they have so many options there.
Mm-hmm.
So many options. And
who do you think their priorities to play will be? Because you have to play Jarrett Culver because he was the number 6 overall pick. And if you're not playing him significant minutes, something went wrong.
Yeah, I put him in the Covington and Andrew bin of like, for sure, they're going to play. And I'm inclined to put Lehman there because I do think when you go with the small Covington lineup at the four, I think that's your next biggest wing. And then I think you can just make up for it. Like you can make up for some of the lack of size by going like, all right, we don't have a true power four, but we have Covington 6'8", Lehman 6'8", Wiggins 6'8", you know, whatever, close enough there. Like that's a big wing trio in that way. So I think Lehman goes in there. Okogie's the question mark for me, man. Like how important is it for them to be like, hey, we need like a defensive stopper, because that's his one sort of, I mean, couple the energy in there, like that's his skill. But he's not a Rosas guy.
No.
And does that matter? I don't know. But historically that stuff kind of does matter. And it's part of the reason why I don't think Keita I think he's glued to the end of the bench, not because he's not a good player. It's just,
well, I mean, it was interesting that he was able to come in and contribute last year and play as well as he could for the number 48 overall pick the year before.
Like
that was as good as you could have gotten from that selection is what the Wolves got last year.
He's an NBA player in my book for sure. Yeah. And
mine too.
And like, there's gonna, I mean, for everyone who's been watching Wolves games for a while, like, you end up playing a lot of guys over the course of the year.
I mean,
like a lot of guys.
Pull up the Wolves basketball reference page from last year.
Yeah.
And it lists everyone that was on the roster at one point, and it's ridiculous how many people are.
Go back to like Wiggins and like Levine, the 16 win season, their rookie year. It's like they played like 26 guys. 26. Yeah. I think that's the number. Like, so they're not going to be a great team. They're not going to like, and I think in that come you say, all right, well, let's diversify a little bit. Let's try different things. And that's why someone like Trevion Graham, I think you'll see get a shot. I think so. It's hard to talk about the rotation. It really is
curious
because
how well Trevion Graham's going to be able to shoot the ball, because he's going to be one of their better wing defenders. Like last year, real plus minus, he graded out better than Josh Okogie on defense. But he also shot like 25% from three.
But he shot 41 the year before.
Yes.
That's
which
why
is, and it's, yeah. Which is why I have no idea what to expect. He was in, his attempts went up last year. Like he shot more threes last year than the year he shot 40%+. So you would expect some regression there, just not all the way down as bad as it got.
That's why I just go to, particularly when you have like such polarizing realities in that sort of way. It's the same thing with Culver, where I don't just assume Culver's going to be a bad shooter because he shot 30% last year. I don't assume Trevion Graham's going to be a good shooter because he shot 41% 2 years ago, or that he's a bad shooter that he's 25. I'm watching him shoot. That's what I'm going off of, and I've taken the time. I mean, just because shooting is such a question mark on this team, like I've gone through and watched him, and I watch Trevion Graham shoot, and I don't see a good shooter.
Fair.
And so that's why I would lean closer to the 25 than the 41. But when when we define shooters by their career 3-point percentage, it's, to me, it's ridiculous. It's, I don't know. It's a funny way. It's a funny way to define people. Like we see like someone like JJ Redick, we're like willing to see the, like dig into the gray and be like, oh, well, he shoots 37% because he shoots all these weird shots. But JJ Redick's still the best shooter in the NBA, right? Like, I mean, or one of.
I'm not putting above Steph Curry.
But okay, well, but he's up. You know, he's up there. But we forgive some of that because you're like, oh, he's a great shooter.
He's taking all these shots off balance, coming off screens, and
but then we get down to guys like this, and we're like, oh, I don't know, man. Jake Lehman, he like second half of the year is 24%, and you're like, well, you want to go watch those? There was like 60 shots. Like, I mean, I don't know what the exact number is. It's just that's and it's just my opinion. It's I'm not like beholding myself to what I perceive these guys to be as shooters based on what they shot 3-point percentage-wise last year. Does that mean I think you got a good group of shooters? No, I've watched them shoot. They're not, you don't have, I mean, it was me and you, we were talking about this at the game the other day, and I was like, I mean, this, as I understand these players to be, they're probably bottom 5 3-point shooting team in the NBA, just on shooting talent, and I mean, a lot of that is buoyed by Cat.
Yeah, and Roberts, who I think Roberts is genuinely a good shooter. He's a little too streaky,
yeah,
but he's a good 3-point shooter. Carl is a fantastic 3-point shooter, especially at his position. He's really, really good.
And you know what? In Andrew's average.
Yeah. I wish Andrew took more of them.
Yeah, and I think he will. I would be stunned.
I do too.
If
I would be shocked if if he's not.
So maybe if we anticipate the same from Cat, which that seems fair to do because he's shot 40% from three the past 2 years on, you know, similar volume. I mean, a consistency of the action and what he's done is so different than Jake Layman or Trevion Graham or something like that. Like,
yeah.
When you've watched it, not just the volume of shots, but the same type of shots, then I feel confident in defining Cat as a really good shooter. So, yeah, maybe that pulls him up to, like, 10th, but I would be more inclined to say that this group is a bottom five three-point shooting group on paper.
It's hard for me to see how they'd be really, really good at it.
And I think their hope is that from an offensive style, that presents a lot of easy, open, catch-and-shoot threes mm-hmm. by using Cat in the mid post, by having Andrew play downhill, by Jeff too, by being able to use those guys in the best way that they can go north south, then you're probably leading yourself to get more. I mean, that's how they become an average 3-point shooting team in this league. But what about volume? Like, you think they're going
to
shoot?
I wanted to ask you that, and I wanted to ask you that specifically as it pertains to Carl, because you just mentioned him in the mid post, and we've talked about him in different areas on the floor. How many 3-pointers a game do you think he's putting up? Last year he was at 4.6. The year before that he was at 3.5, 3.4, and 1.1 as a rookie. So it has. I mean, he took a jump last year in how
we
many
know
he was
it can be more.
Per
we
game.
Know it could be more.
But what do you think? One, the goal is for the Wolves and for Carl per game, and two, what do you think it actually is?
The goal is to not go back on film after the game and have him. I mean, I just remember him like being defended by Steven Adams last year, and it's like the first quarter of a game, and he's catching it. You know, it's like swing, top of the key. Cat's got it, and there's like 16 seconds left on the shot clock.
Yeah,
and he's open like. Adams isn't getting all the way out there. And in Cat's head, he's like, well, let's keep the offense going. You know, let's go from a good shot to a great shot. But the amount of times that led to a worse shot, I think was a lot.
Yeah.
So I think the goal is, it's like, let's have that number of times when we're going through the film the next day be, we don't want to have a lot of like, you should have shot it here, Carl. Sort of situations. Do I put a number on it? Like, if we're right in assuming that he's playing from the mid post a lot and he can just take a, you know, kind of step back into the above the break thing there, there's no reason it can't be six and a half.
I think six is a good number.
Yeah.
So I was going to say, if you're feeling like adventurous, it could get to seven.
There was room for it last year.
Yes.
There was room for him to get to it last year. I mean, but that said, he's almost equally dynamic on the block.
Yeah. He's like really good there.
It's weird because it's just a weird balance. I think his two best places on the floor are on the block and above the break. Yet I think you're gonna see him used at the nail a lot,
yeah.
as we were talking about last week. So it's how he's able to turn that into equally effective, because we know he's effective on the block. We know he's effective from above the break. Can you get to that same value in the mid post? That'll be. Definitive. And when he's there, are they asking him, hey, lean back towards getting beyond the 3-point line, or lean forward towards getting to the bucket, or dropping your, like, as the ball rotates, drop down to the block for a quick post up in that sort of way?
Yeah.
That will define, I think, his 3-point numbers there.
Where do you think they are as a team? Last year they shot 28.7 threes per game, which was 26th in the NBA. I think that they're certainly going to strive to shoot more and to be higher than 26th in threes attempted. I'm just curious where they're going to try and make that jump to.
I think Ryan's going to have them let it fly. I think he's going to.
But what is letting it fly? Because, I mean, if you're shooting 30 a game, that puts you right in the middle. If you're shooting 35 a game, it puts you in the top 10.
So they were 26th, shooting 28?
28.7 threes attempted per game last year. They were 26th in the NBA.
And 30 is average? So add two on and you're average?
Last year, 31 was 17th. So 32.1 was 15th.
Yeah, I think they get to at least that range. Not because they can, but I disagree with this, but I don't think you're going to see somebody like Josh Okogie, who is probably the worst shooter of the rotation players. I guess that's a wing. Like, I think he's
not counting like Jordan Bell and Noah Vonleh.
Yeah. And even Noah Vonleh, I mean, that might be close. like, I don't know. I don't think Ryan's going to have a problem with Josh shooting five threes. And is that a good idea? I don't know. But it might be to develop some habits in that sort of way.
Even if Josh is shooting five threes a game, it's opening up space because they're not going to just stand there and watch him shoot them. Most likely.
I don't know, man. What would you do?
They're going to close out on him. Especially early in the year. He's going to get closed out on early in the year. Until he has a month where after a month he's shooting 25%, but until then they're going to close out on
him. No, he comes in as 25. I mean, if I'm Kenny Atkinson, game one of the year, and they decide to have Okogie be that fifth starter, and they go
Teague, I don't think that's happening.
Okogie, Wiggins. Well, it's going to play. I mean, I think
it'll play. I don't think he starts.
I think it's possible. I think it's a possibility. If I'm coming out there and actually Atkinson they let guys shoot from the mid range all day. They say, okay, you're under this percentage. Go ahead.
Sure.
Fire away. They let Gorgie do it last year. If you remember in that game, they said, go ahead, fire away. You're going to make 45-46% of them. Jared Allen's going to stay back in the lane. And if I'm Kenny Atkinson and Josh Okogie is, you know, rotating from the weak side corner to the weak side above the break, I'm saying to who's Brooklyn's like starting to?
This year, Caris LeVert probably.
Yeah, LeVert. I'm saying,
or Joe Harris.
I would stunt into the lane all day. And because what do you want to take away? If I want to take away from this team, what I'm concerned about them punishing me offensively is Cat, obviously,
sure,
on the block. Can Caris come in to mitigate some of his touches in Cat's high leverage areas within the lane? Yeah, I'm coming in to do that. And I'm saying, don't get in the way of Wiggins and Teague.
Yeah.
If they're barreling down, like, come in for that, like, semi like charge setup, you know, to be the wall. And if they swing out to Josh, we're fine with a chasing closeout.
Yeah.
Like that's what I would do.
That's what it'll be. But they're going to close out on him. He's going to get his open shots, but they're not going to stand there and just watch him shoot.
Yeah. I mean, I mean, back in the day when I played, it was like we had the rule of it's a 0-5 closeout. Like, and to take the J.J. Redick, you know, if you're playing against J.J. Redick, that's a 5.
Yeah.
You know, always. You're there. And if you're playing against, like, Andres Biedrins, it's a 0. You know, just stay
what in. Kind of a name?
I'm trying to think. That was the worst three-point shooter I could think of. You know,
what
and
a name.
I think you keep Josh in that. If I'm defending him, you keep him in the 1 or 2 area. And you know what? Like, then that presents an opportunity for Josh.
Yeah.
Be the guy who be able to, you know, be able to punish that. And if they are closing out with you with speed and like it's a flying closeout in that sort of way, then go by him. Go by him and find your drop offs, because if you go by LeVert and you get into 12, 15 feet, like then Cat's got that 1-on-1 situation and it's a swing pass, you know, and drive in there and find, you know, find the other thing. And that to me, if Josh has a great offensive year, I think a lot of times we're painting out like Josh has a great offensive year if he makes 38% from three. Well, I think that's very unlikely.
See him getting that high.
So what are the other ways you can be a dynamic player? That's it. To me, that's it. Is he's able to punish a scheme that asks him to shoot without shooting.
Yeah.
Which is weird. It's hard to do, but that's, you know, I think that's going to be part of the learning curve for him in that sort of capacity. And I think a lot of the guys are going to be like that too. Like, I don't think Lehman's just going to be like a knockdown guy where they're going to be closing out 4 or 5 on him.
Well, they don't have that guy on the wing.
They don't have any.
The closest thing to that is Robert Covington on the wing.
Yeah.
That's the closest wing they have to someone that is going to be, and he's probably a 4, a 4 closeout.
Yeah, sure. You know what? I think to the Napier point, too, I think he would be a guy that teams would really respect shooting, too, in that sort of way. Maybe because it's like, all right, well, he's not going to like come into the lane and like dunk on us. So
yeah,
like let's take away, you know, let's pick our spots here. But yeah, just generally speaking, because none of those guys, as you mentioned, were assuming are going to be knockdown guys. How do you adjust for that? How do you adjust to the way that the defense is adjusting to that? You know, because the defense is going to be adjusting to priority. They're going to go build Belichick on it. They'll be like, all right, we're taking away Cat.
And
like
that's what they should do.
That's what they're going to do.
Even if the Wolves were a better shooting team, Carl is always going to be their best player.
Right.
You're always going to want to take away what the other team does best. I mean, they could have J.J. Redick on this roster, and it's still going to be, we're taking away Carl.
Yeah.
That's what it was always going to be.
But there's degrees of that.
Sure.
There's degrees of that. And if I'm Kenny Atkinson, I'm pushing the degrees on Cat, you know, or, you know, they're going to play more teams than Brooklyn this year. But like,
they only play Brooklyn twice.
That's it. But that relationship, that dynamic.
Kenny Atkinson's going to be prepared.
Kenny Atkinson is an interesting one, man, because everyone goes all Houston on analytics, and that's because the way that they do it offense, they're the most analytically inclined offensive team. Duh, like that's not even close.
Yeah.
But Brooklyn is the most analytically inclined defensive team in the shots that they ask you to take. And so I think we'll see right away, like game one. Like they're gonna be like, this is what we think you're bad at. Prove us wrong.
Yeah.
And we'll learn. We'll learn there. And how Josh or Layman or whoever it might be responds to that. Like again, Noah Vonleh. I think Noah Vonleh is gonna bomb away from the top of the key. And if I'm Brooklyn, I might be like, okay. Like that's all right. If Vonleh's starting at the four and Cat's on the block and Vonleh's above the break, bombing away threes at like 31-32%, I think they might be like, okay, that's fine. So Cat only shot two shots in the first quarter. Win. Like,
yeah.
I think.
If you lose a game to the Timberwolves this year because someone other than Karl Anthony Towns had a great game, you're going to tip your cap and say, you know what? Good job.
Yeah.
Good. You beat us at something we didn't think you could beat us at. Good job. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And yeah, I just, how the Wolves make that happen will be definitive to how good they are.
Yeah, it's going to be something interesting to find out.
Yeah.
I don't have a good answer for it.
No, but that's I mean, it's a blank canvas on this team. Like we're hearing a lot of stuff, you know, switching, speed, playing with pace, versatility. There are all these words that like they're words, but it's kind of like
words.
It's kind of like when Kyrie Irving talks, you know, like you said a lot of stuff and some of it was about basketball, but I don't know what it means.
I am very familiar with Kyrie Irving.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's how I kind of like, and I'm not even ripping on like Gerson or Ryan or whatever. Like they're painting with broad strokes of ways they might play.
Yeah.
We don't know what that's going to look like. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's the first game of the season or first handful of games of the season, like, wait a minute, that didn't look like what you were describing the whole time. And what their response would be was like, well, in ways we played fast.
Mm-hmm.
We got, have you been timing how quick Teague got into the half court?
Yeah. Like, well, that was Ryan's things last year. That was how he measured pace last year, is that they wanted to get the ball in the front court by 22 on the shot clock.
That's what I'm saying though. Like, so then I, like you or I could ask Ryan afterwards, be like, hey, you guys are like 26th in pace. There was 15 games in the season. What is it? Well, his response would be like, we're getting into the half court fast. That's how we're defining.
We're manipulating the pace how we want it.
Exactly. Like they could say that or to the switching point, they could be like, well, have you watched what our wings have been doing? Like, be like, well, Kat hasn't switched one time this year. Like, what did you mean by switching? Well, they say, well, you know, we're using Kat strategically, to use Rose's word, but we've been switching like crazy on the wings. We have, you know, Robert, Andrew, and Jake, they're all switch partners, like,
yeah,
like that. So it's, we like to see things in black and white.
Yeah.
It's easier. I would, like, it's easier to think about in that way. I just think all of these, like, adjectives that they're using to describe the way they're playing all have a ton of gray behind them.
Yeah. And when it's an unknown, unlike last year, unlike, and maybe a little similar to 2 years ago, but when you didn't really know what it was going to look like with Jimmy Butler in the fold. Mm-hmm. But it's an unknown because this is Ryan's first time really running the show. Like, he was the interim coach last year, but you don't really get to change a lot. This is Gerson's first real opportunity to run a basketball operation, mm-hmm. because what happened in Dallas was like 3 months, and that I'm not counting that either. So I think they have an idea, but until they actually put it on the floor, I don't know how true their blueprint is either. Mm-hmm. Like, I think they have a lot of really interesting ideas and a lot of things that they want to try, and they're not entirely sure what's all going to work yet. I think that we're going to see them throw a lot of things at the wall.
Well, I don't think they know what their 10-man rotation is. I don't think they know how many players are going to play.
No. I think the rotation is going to change every night. Depending on the matchup, I think the rotation will change. I don't think they have a set 10-man rotation.
Which will be so different than last season. Because Tibbs was the complete opposite
Tibbs
way.
Tibbs' rotation was the most predictable thing in the game of basketball.
Yes.
We could sit in our seats, look at the clock, and say, it's about time for Josh to get up.
And boom, there goes
Josh. And there he goes.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, there are advantages to that Tibbs strategy.
Sure.
But again, I think it's with teams who are more, they're at a different stage in the process of, mm-hmm. you know, of how good they are. And, you know, I think that at the end of the day, in a really simple level, like that was a fatal flaw of Tibbs's, he saw the team to be in a different stage of quality than they were in reality. And when the Wolves are in this like pubescent stage of whatever it is they are, it makes sense to have a lot of diversity in that way and, yep. and not do the Tibbs thing. Now, 3 years from now, the Wolves have their core of, you know, Covington and Cat and D'Angelo Russell and Jarrett Culver is this.
Oh, that. You're writing D'Angelo Russell in. And Robert Covington stays. Wow.
The next year.
How do they get that done?
I'm not sure. But if that happens, then yeah, let's get a little bit more concrete because we want to maximize these groups together. But with this team, we don't know. We don't know how Culver meshes with, how does Culver mesh with Lehman versus how he meshes with Okogie versus Wiggins. All that. You got to see.
Yeah.
You got to see that. And it's going to be so much so early that we're going to be like, well, in this 44-minute sample size, Okogie and Culver are a plus 21 together. But, it's going to take so much of the eye test, I think.
Yeah, I do too.
Right? Because, like, it's going to have a feel to it. Like, what was the synergy here as it pertained to those two? And then how did that synergize with Cat?
Yeah.
Like, Saric last year, right? Sure, it made sense to, like, hey, we should have Saric be the starter because he stretches the floor more than Cat and we give Cat more room.
Yeah.
Well, that synergy never came together between Cat and Saric.
Just didn't work.
Yeah. So you're like, I mean, I got to the point where I was like, I know they're not necessarily like trying to win games, but I think if they were, the best option would have been to play Taj more.
Taj was beat up.
It's weird.
He really wasn't even playing at the end of the season.
You know what I'm saying? Like that type of player. Sure. Like you want to think about it like, with Cat and Saric, Cat was the 5, Saric was the 4.
Yeah.
And with Taj, I think Taj was the 5 and Cat was the 4.
Yeah. Carl played a lot more power forward in the first half of the season.
And I think that was better for that team last year. We got to see, is that the same thing? Is it the same? Now you got all these different pieces.
Yeah.
Maybe that was only that way because he was playing with ISO Derrick Rose, ISO Andrew Wiggins, and, you know, like with this different group, you're going to, there's all these moving pieces that they need to define, like, all right, these multiple puzzle pieces here connect to Cat, but what's the best one?
Yeah.
What's the best one we want to do? Because it becomes this whole chain of, like, what's the end product?
Yeah.
Like, 6 pieces down the chain. And, so it's a blank slate right now.
It's going to be interesting what this team looks like. I think that we can both agree there.
For a 36-win team or whatever, 35, what Vegas has it, it's like,
it's going to be fascinating to see how they get to that number.
Rather than just like rolling it over being like a 36-win, like a team like Detroit or something where so much is the same and they're still
Detroit's
like in
going
the
to be the same team forever.
Yeah, right. Like
forever.
Which I would, as a consumer, I'd rather have the team that has some ambiguity.
I think that's
more interesting as a fan.
And hope. Detroit hasn't won a playoff game since
right
08 or 09. Mm-hmm. And I don't see it happening anytime soon.
Right. Yeah. Like, and that's the goal of this whole strategy in the big picture 3-5 years down the road is we found something.
If nothing else, I think that Wolves fans can say this team is closer to being a title contender than a team like Detroit.
Yeah.
Than a team like, mm-hmm. pick another one out of a hat. But
right.
They have hope. They have something to look forward to. It's just not here right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it probably requires a lot of different moves. You got a lot of guys on 1-year deals. Like it's on that good Wolves team 3-5 years from now, you know what? Noah Vonleh is probably not on the team.
Yeah.
Shabazz Napier almost definitely isn't.
You know what? They're necessary to get to that point.
Exactly.
Just like if you look at Brooklyn right now, Brooklyn is a drastically different team than they were last year.
That's good. Yep. That's
but there are a lot of guys, like D'Angelo Russell was not going to be part of, most likely was not going to be part of the Brooklyn team that became a title contender. But you don't get to the Brooklyn team that was a title contender without D'Angelo Russell becoming D'Angelo Russell in Brooklyn.
Absolutely.
That's exactly the way you have to look at it if you're the Wolves.
It's 3D chess, man.
Yeah.
Which is cool. That's what makes the games really interesting on a micro scale. And then being able to like extrapolate that out to, you know, like a macro scale and be like, okay, this is working now. Will it work when we're optimized?
And I think that one of the best examples of this is Toronto last year in DeMar DeRozan. The Raptors don't win a title with DeMar DeRozan on the roster.
Totally.
But they don't win a title without DeMar DeRozan becoming an all-star first on their roster.
Yep.
That's exactly the way that you have to look at it.
3D chess.
Yep, 100%. That's Dane Moore. I'm Danny Cunningham. Follow him on Twitter at DaneMooreNBA. I'm at Real D Cunningham. This has been Raised by Wolves. You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, the all-new Score North app, or scorenorth.com. We'll talk to you next week.